The following business conversation is brought to you by Trudon, the publisher of the Yellow Pages and proud supporter of small business in South Africa.
Hi, Dave from A1 Builders in Pretoria.
Yeah.
It's Dan. I found your number on the internet and I need you to build me a room, the purpose of which I cannot disclose.
What?
Fine. It's a sunroom. Can you start immediately?
It's 4 a.m.
I'm sure it's 4 a.m. somewhere, Dave, but here in SA, it's 10.
You mean USA?
There's more than one Pretoria out there. For the quickest and most efficient way to find what you're looking for, start your search with yellowpages.co.za or download the app. Yellow Pages, for local, reliable results.
Last week, we had Catherine Constantinidis. I think she was on holiday, but she shared an inspirational thought with us. And we had Visser du Plessis, CEO of and founder of Diamond Investment Brokers and a serial entrepreneur on the show. A fantastic podcast to download. Go to our page on Cliff Central and download that podcast. Today, we talk to Alon Reyes and our usual man back from holiday, Richard Angus, about the growth trap and how to avoid this. That'll be the main thrust. Alon, welcome to Leadership Platform and our SMB conversation.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been in the studio before,
yes,
but not on this show. I mean,
not on this show. This is the show, apparently.
So it's good to have you with us. Race Corp, this is what I'm told, the only privately held, unfunded, profitable business incubator on the African continent, supporting in excess of 400, maybe more,
500
businesses. So practically doing the thing on the ground. We're going to talk to him today. But first, Brian Maudsley from Cape Town. He's going to share an inspirational thought with us for just a couple of minutes, and then we'll get into the meat of the conversation. Brian, welcome as always.
Good morning, Adrian. I hope you're well.
Very well. It's great to have you on. Go for it. We look forward to your thought.
Okay. So giving some thought into some of the challenges that startups have, I thought I'd point out, I wouldn't say they're fatal startup mistakes, but they could quite possibly be fatal if you make these mistakes. The first one is questioning yourself at every turn. The danger with this is that you never get anything done. Secondly, biting off more than you chew. It obviously stands to reason that if you take on more work than you can handle, things are going to fall off and you're going to suffer. Something that is quite close to my heart is lacking a social media presence. Today, if you're not on social media, often people don't think you're a real organization and don't actually exist. Finally, expecting everything to be handed to you. This is not going to happen. As an entrepreneur, you have to work for everything. And finally, which is potentially the most important of these fatal mistakes that you could make, is not taking advice. At the end of the day, you are not an expert at everything, and listening to people who are experts, like the people that you're going to have on your show today, for example, would be a very wise move and something that all entrepreneurs should do. Take advice.
Okay,
so there you go.
Okay, questioning too much, it paralyzes you potentially, questioning yourself too much, biting off more than you can chew, lacking social media presence. Of course, you're biased there, but I seem to agree with you. Expecting too much. What's that nice word that we use?
Entitlement
mentality, thinking I deserve it simply because of whatever reasons, and not taking advice, not having the humility to take advice. Brilliant. Thank you for that specific thought, Brian Maudsley. Great to speak to you.
Appreciate it.
All the best.
No problem. Have a good one.
All the best. Richard Angus, welcome back.
Thank you.
Are you happy to be back? We need to know that before we kick off.
Very happy to be back.
All right. You have energy. You're ready for it.
Back from 2 weeks in the Berg.
Oh, lovely, man. We're all jealous, but we all have to come back ultimately, and hopefully we love what we do back home, and I know you do. All right, here we are. We've got Alon Reyes in the studio. We're talking about the growth trap. I guess, I'm here to bring back the real basics. I have some of the answers myself, but that's a wonderful problem to have, isn't it? My business struggling, and suddenly all the elements come together. I scale it up, and the growth starts kicking in, and I could be in trouble. You could go under if you do that wrong. So Richard, you've got thoughts around that. Kick us off.
Yeah, so maybe let's define first what we talk of as the growth trap.
Yeah.
because lots of people say, so what is that? For me, it's the scenario of the business is starting to grow. The revenues are coming in. The customer base is growing nicely. Your operations are increasing in complexity. And as a business leader and as a business owner and entrepreneur, what you'd like to be in is a scenario as, you know, as your complexity of your business grows, if you can imagine a graph, as complexity increases on the x-axis, the time and effort and energy you're putting in as a leader, if that's on the y-axis, it should be this parabola, you know, this kind of curve that goes up and then goes down. The growth trap is when, as complexity increases, you're just spending more and more and more and more time and energy on the business. And, I mean, the reality is we all have finite amounts of time and energy that we can put into things. And so what happens is you get to the scenario where you have your business is all-consuming. It becomes everything. Not perhaps because you're making choices for it to be that way, but because it is just sucking up your
And not necessarily because you're making money.
Well, you probably are making money, but the cost-benefit reward trade-off is starting to make less and less sense to you as a person, as a leader.
You're asking questions now. You're wondering.
Yeah, and you're kind of going, why did I do this, and did I actually sign up for this to happen in my own life? And it might not only be you in the growth trap, it might be you and your layer of leadership, you know, below you in the organization. Everybody's just the hamster on the wheel, and we're running and we're running and we're running, and we're kind of going, okay, you know, we were used to running for month end. Now we're running 30 days of the month. We used to have a, Monday, Friday. Now we have Monday through Monday and you know, Saturdays and Sundays, and just it's just this mess of things moving so
well, far. I started this business for a change in quality of life. I used to be an executive, and I started my own small business, and now I'm asking questions. This is just crazy, you know? My life is more hectic than it used to be.
Yeah, it's what I call a bar one day, you know, 25-hour yes. day, and you're kind of wondering what's going on here.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, when that starts happening, that you're in a growth trap. The problem is you may not see it as a growth trap because you may not see the profitability that you thought should be there, perhaps. But you're in a trap, in a growth trap of some kind. It might or might not be linked to a profitability number. So don't always use profitability as the deciding factor. You know, if I'm making it, oh, yeah, I'm in a growth trap. Or, hold on a second, there's something else.
Yeah.
It's all linked to growth, complexity, and time and effort. For me, that's where this conversation starts. Alan, your views on that definition of the growth trap?
But just before, Alan, I mean, you have had your own businesses. You're an entrepreneur. You've felt small business practically in your life. And even what you're doing now is a business on its own. But you work with entrepreneurs, hundreds of them, your business, who are going through exactly this. So we couldn't potentially find someone more equipped to add value to today's conversation. So your thoughts from what Richard said.
Yeah, I think Richard's hit the nail on the head. And if you look into my eyes, you'll see they're quite red. It's because I feel like I'm in this exact position.
Okay, we have a growth trap scenario in studio right now.
Yeah, and it's horrible to be in it. And I've been in it many times, and it's a process to get out of it. And it's, I think the most important thing about what we're talking about today is to recognize it. So that you can do something about it.
That's the first challenge, isn't it? Yeah. When you're in something, you don't recognize it.
Yeah.
You're the last one. People around you can sense it, but you don't.
It's a little bit of the Alcoholics Anonymous moment. You know, I have a growth trap in my business.
Yeah.
Okay, let's sort this out.
And there's another saying, which is that more businesses die from indigestion than they do from starvation. In other words, when they go through that growth phase and they're taking on a huge amount of business and they don't have the requisite infrastructure, people, infrastructure, capital, etc., for that growth, they tend to collapse inward and implode. And I see that in our businesses when they get these big deals, all our team become incredibly sensitive to the fact that this is now not a moment to celebrate, but a moment to be anxious about our businesses, because that's when they start to fall apart. And when they're growing at 10-20% per annum, then they're fine. But the moment they have this phenomenal growth, then there's an issue.
Yeah. Okay, that's a very interesting thing. So most businesses will not have that attitude. It's celebrate. Am I right? But you're saying, hold on, if you're going to celebrate, do it very briefly, but don't get fixated on it.
Yeah, it's exactly what's the moment that happens, we flag the businesses in Raise Corp, and we all our guides then know we're in for trouble now. Within the next 3 months, we're in for trouble.
Yeah. I think the one thing that always sticks in my mind is, you know, you often have these people that will have the ceremonial bell that they ring when that big deal comes in, either figuratively or actually physically in their business. This massive deal lands. And it is sometimes a scenario of a guppy and a whale. Mm. And you've got this guppy trying to swallow this whale. And and I like your statement of, you know, the business dies from indigestion rather than starvation. It is so true. It's you swallow this thing up and you think you got it done and sorted because, hey, you did deals a tenth of the size before, or you handled orders a tenth of the size before. So, you know, 10 times, shouldn't be a problem, or 15 times or whatever the multiple is. And you forget the complexity. I once had a colleague who said to me in the world of banking, running a bank branch is actually a fairly simple thing. It's when you've got 400 of the things dotted around the country that the complexity starts up. And that's so true. It's, you know, as that multiplier effect kicks in, the complexity is actually an exponential issue rather than a linear.
Does that speak to what Steve Maraboli, we had him on the show from the US the other day, and he said more businesses die from suicide than... And being murdered, that sort of analogy.
Well, the research shows that 90% of all businesses that close down voluntarily. Only 10% are forced or murdered in your analogy. Not a nice analogy, but only 10% of businesses that shut their doors by force.
So we say small businesses, that's startups, die within the first 18 months, let's say, 70% or 80% of them. And you're saying about 90% of them die because of that.
They die voluntarily. Voluntarily. In other words, the entrepreneur cannot take either the cash flow pain, the complexity, the realization that they're not an entrepreneur. There's a whole bunch of factors that contribute to them. But I think what's important is you spoke about now, Richard, about this complexity. And most people that I speak to don't understand that complexity, what it really means. So maybe I can use an analogy. I know you know this, but maybe for some of our listeners, you and I are talking here. It's one-two communication. I speak to you, you speak to me. The moment we have Adrian in here, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We go from 2 to 6. The moment you add a fourth person, goes to 16 and so on and so forth. Mm. So that complexity, to manage that complexity, is incredibly difficult because it has another sort of pragmatic view of that. If you've got a staff meeting and you start off in a small room, then your staff grows and now... Mm. You need a bigger room, but can you afford the bigger room? How do you manage that? And then if you've got a second branch, you spoke about a different branch, how do you communicate between the two branches? The same thing. Now you've got communication issues. And so as businesses grow, this level of complexity becomes incredibly difficult to control.
So it's more exponential than you think.
That's my point.
It's more exponential than you think.
I once read a brilliant book by a gentleman by the name of Robert Townsend. He was an ex-CEO of Avis. Mm-hmm. He was the guy that came around with the "We Try Harder" slogan. Mm-hmm. And he made a comment in his book, and I'll never forget it, and it's something that sticks with me. It's stuck with me for many years. He said, "The size of the disaster is the square of the distance between the two operations." So if you've got an office in New York and you're opening in Washington, smallish disaster. And this is obviously in the States. He says, move it to San Francisco and watch the size of the disasters that you have around communication and business issues and leadership and all those. They become exponential, you know, to the power of two. He says, and then go New York and London and see what happens.
And then go to Africa or whatever.
So, and I think that's so very true. You know, the complexity of things like distance, communication, different offices. I mean, I've seen that multiple times where that just amplifies the issues in your business tenfold.
But yeah, let's, and I know you're leading it, Richard, but let's go to the growth traps for a small business. So we may leave the impression, even though the conversation is very interesting, that's way in the distance for me as a small 3 million turnover business, or 1 million turnover, or 10 million turnover. Well, what, let's talk very small, basic challenges. And some of this is relevant, of course. You know, you can have a small business and suddenly feel, I need presence in Cape Town instead of just doing it in Bloemfontein or wherever, in the context of what you're saying, Richard. Lon, Richard, your thoughts.
When entrepreneurs get... quite overzealous in terms of the expansion. Very often when I meet entrepreneurs, they talk about, you know, setting up branches all over South Africa and all over Africa and all over the world. And then I ask them how it's going here. It's not going so well.
Mm.
And my first thing that I said to them is get South Africa right. Get your own branch right. Get your own business right before you think of expanding. The mistake that we make is we become overzealous in terms of our expansion and we expand too quickly and then we implode. And you'll see this in many businesses. They will go and set up 3, 4, 5 branches, and then you'll see in their growth they go from 3, 4, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Mm.
Sometimes they last till 1, but that can kill them completely. Get your home base correct.
What should be your guide? Is it sales growth? So I don't.
And margin.
I don't open up in Cape Town until a contract determines that.
Yeah.
Or real hard business as well as margin. Explain that a bit
cash
more.
Cash flow, margin. So you have to have sufficient margin. Because as your business grows, what you tend to see is the complexity brings on new overhead in terms of a management infrastructure, more physical overhead, and your margins, your net margins start to drop.
And there's another factor that also features into that. The moment you're now in multiple environments, your competition elements increase significantly as well. Mm. So you might not have been playing against somebody when you were playing in Joburg, for example, but they're in Cape Town.
Mm.
Now you go play on their home turf.
Their backyard, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Now suddenly your margins are under pressure. You've got, because in Cape Town, but now you've got and you've got to watch how you do your pricing structure, because if you price somebody in Cape Town, and you're pricing there against this local guy that's your new your competition. But that same entity is buying from you. Say they're a national brand. They're also buying from you in Joburg. Now they want to know and understand from you why the Cape Town price is different to the Joburg price. And next minute, your Cape Town pricing now becomes your Joburg pricing because everybody in your customer base is asking these questions.
Mm.
So suddenly you import your competitor problem from that new region in Cape Town and you bring it back into your base in Joburg. Now all of a sudden your margins are under pressure nationally, and you thought it was a bright thing to go and just put your finger in the pond in Cape Town, and suddenly you just imported a problem. You know, Cape Town's 10% of your business, but now you've just brought back those issues to 90% of your revenue stream.
Mm.
Oopsie.
Interesting view there.
Yeah,
Alon, agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, the. I speak from experience. I've tried to open. You speak about Cape Town. I've tried to open up 4 or 5 times in Cape Town. Hopefully, I'll open up this after 10 years of trying, because I'm commercial. So I don't want a flag in a map. So very often people just want a flag in a map, just for an ego point of view. I will not open until it's commercially viable.
Yep.
So and what I see is that people are not thinking around the commercial, the bottom line. They're thinking about that flag on the map.
It's all about the mountain.
Yeah.
Alon. It's all about the mountain. It's amazing. You say to people, okay, you're going to expand. Where's your expansion? I mean, we had this own debate in the finance team. We looked at where our operations are, and everybody says, well, are you in Cape Town? Are you in Cape Town? Well, actually, the place where we identified as a point of engagement was actually in KZN. Mm. Okay, and we've opened an operation there.
Mm.
Why? Because of the commercial viability. We ran the numbers and said, okay, this is the next space that we want to play actively in. And people may question that and say, well, why do that? Why not do, 3 or 4 different regions simultaneously? Well, the numbers have to stack up, as you say.
Mm. So it mustn't be an ego thing.
Oh, no.
I mean, and that always comes in. Right. Now that things are looking fairly good, it would be nice to not just have an office in Natal, but to have it in Umhlanga, overlooking the ocean. And you blink your eyes a year or two later, big mistake. Alon?
Yeah, we have a poster at Rays Corp called The False Start. And, what we find is as soon as companies do a turnover 3 times, and we use this as a benchmark, it's not a rule, but 3 times their average monthly turnover, and then they start to, there's 9 different phenomena we see, including dressing better, looking for, now starting to expand their offices and looking for a new head office, buying a new car, doing what we call a glory lap. When 3 or more of these set in, then we know that business is in for trouble. And the underlying word is ego. It's now about ego and
image,
the sense that I've arrived. And in my experience, the moment you get the big deal, you haven't even begun because you don't even know what you have to do in order to actually deliver on that deal. And delivering on the deal is 90% of the work. Getting the deal is only 10% of the work. And I think many entrepreneurs flip that percentage the other way around.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. I think some of the other things, I mean, Anon, earlier you raised the issue of cash flow. I think I've seen more people starve themselves from a cash flow perspective than anything else in an expansionary type of business. You know, the big deal rolls in, the terms are perhaps the same or maybe a little better for the client than what's been done traditionally. But the problem is the volume. Okay, so, you know, you can fund that, you know, your working capital line might be able to fund that R500,000 transaction, but can it fund the R5 million or the R25 million transaction? And that's where a lot of guys just run into that whole working capital pressure, and they don't think about it until it's almost too late. I don't know what your experience is in that space.
So when companies are doing well, the first thing I tell them to do is to go and increase their overdraft, which seems so counterintuitive. They say, I don't need the money. I'm saying, you don't need the money now. But what right now you have leverage at the bank, go to the banks now and get as much OD facility as you can. Because if you're going to go into that growth phase, then you're going to need that that OD facility. So expansion for me, when companies expand, the first thing that you've got to do is make sure that you've got enough financial runway for twice the amount that you think you need, twice the amount. and entrepreneurs always underestimate what they need and always overestimate what they're going to sell. So I always halve their sales and double the expenses. And then I say, and then whatever that number is, double that, and that's what you're going to need.
Okay. There's a question here. I just need to see it clearly. I can't read there. Duncan, just help me. So on the complexity of growth, it will be good if you can emphasize on the principles of George. Now, where's that gone? George S.
Soros.
Clayson.
In his
book, The Richest Man in Babylon.
Yes.
To make your money work for you, live below your means, etc., etc. You aware of that, Alon?
Yeah, The Richest Man in Babylon, lovely little book. I read it every couple of years just as a nice little refresher. I think it's just basic business. Live below your means. If you have got an income of X, make sure you're not spending you're spending less than that, and use your money in productive assets as opposed to unproductive expenses.
Another good book is The Millionaire Next Door.
That's brilliant. I love that book.
Similar principle of living well below your means, and there's some very key principles there that tie up in terms of how you use your available cash and where it goes and how it becomes productive.
Is it not, in the end, and that's the irony, it comes down to the real motive as to why you started the business. Why are you doing what you're doing? If it's a very superficial motive, it'll reflect in your behavior. If it's a passion for the product or the, but if it is to play more golf or something really that is your perception of what happens when you have your own business rather than reality, then you're in trouble. Because ultimately decisions are made with a what's in it for me type base. I'm very interested, a few more key principles that leaders can look at in this growth trap and how to handle it.
So maybe to get onto something that's a little bit more, a little on the softer side, is the question around the people decisions that you make. You know, when you start a business, you bring people into your business that have certain skill sets and capabilities and knowledge and are certain types of people. And sometimes you have what we term the lousy people decision. The person was great when you started, but 18 months, 36 months down the track, the business has grown and you're now in this pressure space, and you may very well find that you've got the wrong type of people and you don't make the right people decisions at the right time. So sometimes you've got great starters, and then you've got great operators, and then you've got great enders. And the reality is that if you've got people that can, you know, always there's somebody that says, you know, I'm a great firefighter, and if I don't have a fire, I'll start one for you. You know, I'm not so sure I want that person starting the fire as we land that massive contract that's, you know, 10 times our monthly turnover in one foul deal. You know, you don't want the fire starter in on that deal, stoking the fires and making sure it's nice and hot in the kitchen. You need somebody there that can actually execute well, take the process that's worked, that's tried and tested, and you can deliver on that and use that process. So, you know, you need to have the ability to, as a leader, pull in and pull out the right types of people in your team. And making lousy people decisions because you maybe don't want to upset somebody along the way, well, that's where your leadership is really put to the test.
Okay. Alon, we've got 2 minutes or so left. Let's start wrapping up some key thoughts around the growth trap that you feel entrepreneurs must know.
You know, I just want to maybe relate to this people thing. I've got a concept called the Bermuda Triangle. And the issue around small businesses when they grow is they start to compete with big corporates for talent and for those for their salaries. So when you're a 10-man operation, you know, anyone joining your organization knows that you're a small business. When you're a 50-man operation, you're competing against medium-sized businesses. And so when you're looking for that appropriate talent for that part of your growth phase, you're competing, you know, with the guys bigger than you. But when you get to 100-plus, then now you're competing with corporates. But you can't afford those salaries, but you need them to take your business through. All your talent is very hard to maintain. They disappear into this Bermuda Triangle and disappear to the corporates who are prepared to pay a premium for that talent. So for me, it's something that I battle with is how do you retain that talent when you're at that size? And you'll see from all the research around businesses that get to 150, it becomes a very wobbly point in their growth phase, and many don't make it past that because they lose their talent.
That's a very powerful point, and maybe a conversation on that sometime, Richard. Your final thoughts before we wrap up.
I think, you know, my final point, and it goes to where you go with the show in terms of leadership, is as a leader you need to be very self-aware of what is termed leadership stagnation. So you've got into this business, it's going, and eventually you just become tired. And I think, you know, you've got to take the principles of leadership that you have and kind of go, well, what gives me energy? What revitalizes me? What allows me to get up in the morning and say, hey, I'm going to go to work today, go and lead my business, go and make a success of life. And that's a key point in that growth trap, because if you arrive as a leader and you don't have the energy, guess what happens? 15 minutes after you walk into the office, everybody around you is going, I wish he hadn't come in today. I wish she hadn't come in today. You know, and by 9:30, everybody's kind of looking for an excuse to send you out of the office so that they can actually do their jobs well, because you're actually a pain rather than a benefit to the business.
Okay.
Something to think about.
That's some thoughts on the growth trap. And Alon Reyes from Reyes Corp, we'll have you back in. I hope you want to come back in. We need your kind of expertise on the show, or maybe we pull you in for some inspirational thoughts. Quickly, your thoughts on this. There's Africa Rise on Twitter. They send these very interesting tweets. I think they have an event coming up in June. And yes, too, tell me if you agree. Dear Entrepreneur, they always start with, Dear Entrepreneur, yes, it's a slow process, but quitting won't speed it up. Keep going.
Love that.
It's lovely, isn't it? And then the last one, Dear Entrepreneur, and I'll end with this. When 99% of people doubt your idea, you're either gravely wrong or about to make history.
Love that too.
And that's a lovely. So thank you so much for joining us, Richard. Nice to have you back. Louis Groenewald, quietly in the corner, but he'll come alive in the next show, which is our Leadership Masterclass. Listen carefully. We're going to talk about the different intelligences leaders need. There's 5 at least. We'll talk to the Professor Feltzman from UJ about that, and our very full panel in the studio. And then we also have with us the CEO of Exclusive Books, a romantic business, exciting business, but man, I think a difficult time for the book business. We'll zoom in on him in the second half of the Leadership Masterclass and look at the challenges he's facing as a man who's experienced and who's been in that business for many years. So do stay tuned for that. This conversation, however, was brought to you by Trudon. Visit trudonhome.co.za for all your small business marketing needs. Trudon, it's our business to grow your business.
Ivan Cleaners, Worcester. Conrad speaking.
Hi, Conrad. This is Chad from the Glen Gables Hotel in Worcester.
We're looking for a new cleaning service. I found your number on the internet. Would you be interested?
Yeah, Flip, great. Where are your offices?
Well, on the corner of Alaho and Aldo, across from the Beef Cack and Tag Shack.
Cack and what?
There's more than one Worcester out there. Reach a more relevant audience by advertising with the Yellow Pages. Visit yellowpages.co.za and get listed online with South Africa's most trusted business directory. Yellow Pages, for local, reliable results.